Now, we go in to get Bin Laden. We don't get him. He gets away. Why did we stay?
You know, there's a lot of reasons, and I think the most important that I believe was justifiable was the fact that we did recognize in 03 that there was going to be a resurgence, and the no matter how you feel about Afghanistan and the central government, the idea was the time was to give the Afghan government and the Afghan people and some level of breathing space, much like the surge did in Iraq to give the Iraqi people an ability to kind of get their act together. In 07, we were kind of going through the same thing in 03. As a matter of fact, our footprint there, George, was minimal. We had 10,500 troops, and if you put that in context, Afghanistan is a larger country than Iraq.
Yes.
And because we were so lean, I think I would argue that we were better suited and better able to do things by the fact there was minimal bureaucracy. And we used to joke about the fact that we majors were running the war. I mean, we just got things done. It was amazing. And as we went through, the idea was there to really focus on allowing the Afghan people to figure out how they wanted to move forward. And essentially, we started recognizing the Taliban for what they were. We're trying to resurge. There's a chapter in the book. Two chapters which cover Mountain Viper, which is the first Taliban attempt to come back into Afghanistan in September of 03, and it took the army on force on force, which was just not a good idea for them, and they learned from their mistake. You just don't do that, and they fell back to their safe havens, and this is where things get a little bit dicey, because I think we as a government and Department of Defense lost a clear vision of what we wanted to do there, because essentially we recognized in 03 that the real issue was not going to be Afghanistan, it was going to be Pakistan, and the president has said this in his current strategy. It's as true today as it was then.
And Mubarak was there at the time, right?
Musharraf was the leader.
Musharraf
was the leader, and he was the dictator. He came to power in Pakistan via coup d'état, and he was running things there. And he was a general, and so he ran the country very, very well. I mean, it was a very efficient thing. And for those who don't understand Pakistan really depends on the Pakistani army. Pakistani army is almost a political wing as much as is a military organization. That is the glue. It was essentially trained by the British before they left years ago, and that tradition has kind of stayed with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are truly the glue that holds that society together, for better or for worse. It's not good or bad. It just is. And with that said, then, Musharraf and his folks had a very strong idea of how they wanted to do things on the border, which frankly excluded us. So there was supposed to be a partnership between the Musharraf regime and the CIA to work on the Pakistani side of the border, and I'll talk more about that in a second. In Afghanistan, in the meantime, you have ISAF. In addition to our 10,500 troops, you had about between 6,000 and 7,000 ISAF troops, which are NATO ISAF at this point in time. In 03, NATO became the overall command and control organization. This was the first NATO, essentially, expedition outside of NATO's traditional bounds.
And do we have a mission at that time, Tony, when we're there?
We
didn't get to Biden. Did we have a mission?
Mission really was just to, I think, help the people. I mean, that was the whole thing with ISAF. The idea was just trying to help people recover. Something called PRTs, which were provisional recovery teams, went out to a lot of the major provinces. And the idea was, again, to use non-traditional civil military operations to help establish schools and wells and things like that on a minimal scale. We're not talking about a large-scale occupation. We're talking about small groups. And the other thing was working very well, believe it or not, was special operations. This was really a special operations war. At a lot of the fire bases, I went to a number of them, we had small special operations units doing what they traditionally do, which is basically during the day running clinics and at night running raids. So you have the carrot and stick approach, and it was working very well. And again, let me reemphasize, our footprint was minimum. We really were not trying to be seen as occupiers. And one of the biggest factors that helped us then was that this culture understands vengeance. And I know the American psyche may not like this, may not be something we accept well in the West, but they do there. So as much as some of the people didn't like us being there, they understood why we were there and accepted it. Even the tribal leaders in Pakistan understood that we had the right for revenge. And frankly, during this period, a lot of folks believe, and several folks in my think tank now believe, that we helped destabilize Pakistan by the fact we forced the Pakistanis to start trying to go in some of these tribal regions to do our work, essentially, as proxies. So the Pakistanis weren't the ones attacked on 9/11. We were. We had the right to revenge. Therefore, you know, if we had taken direct action during this period, we're talking about the 02, 02, 03, 04 time frame, I think we would not have destabilized Pakistan. But that's an argument for a different day. But back to the Afghan thing. The mission was simply to enable Afghanistan institutions. That was one of the three points we tried to do. Enable Afghan institutions, try to help them get up and running, eliminate the sources of instability, and conduct anti-terrorism. Those are the three points of our mission during that time. That's it. Those were the three.
Well, the first two, since when do we go into countries to do that? We really, even before Iraq, we never went into countries to try to fix them.
Right. And frankly, that is something that we decided to expand on during this period. This is where I don't think we actually know what we're doing, because even if you decide to do something like that, you really have to understand the culture. So you don't do anything wrong, and I think we missed. So we start moving into this. And this was the policy, and so with that policy in mind, we as I mentioned, we broke the back of the first offensive, and we recognize, and I detail, and this is where the book gets into the detail, a lot of the detail. Operation Dark Heart was an operation I came up with after being briefed on some new information relating to safe havens in Pakistan. The leadership targeting cell on which I was serving had this mission to go and take care of, you know, to eliminate these guys. So I came up with this idea, believe it or not, while watching Apocalypse Now. We were living in these nice, nice, very nice, uninsulated 8-man tents with dust and dirt and everything else.
Yeah.
So we had a little DVD player we would take and watch movies on occasion. And I was watching Apocalypse Now, and it came to me, it's like, my God, you know, the idea of mortal terror. And how that if you are living in mortal terror, you're just not going to be able to plan to do insurgency in another country. So the basic premise behind Operation Dark Heart was to create mortal terror in the hearts and minds of the Taliban in their safe havens. And the idea again is to support the idea of giving the Afghan people more time to get their act together. Whether you depend on the policy or not, that was basically right. The slant of Dark Heart.
So did they put the right guy in there with Karzai? You know, a guy from UNICAP?
Well, it's difficult to say by the fact that Karzai ended up being very nepotistic, very tribal, and this has been one of the primary complaints over the past 7 years, and if this is kind of semi-apparent by his brother Amid Wali Karzai being in charge of Kandahar and Kandahar province,